May it please the court. I represent Anna Spanar, petitioner. Respondent is Western Electric Company, and I will refer to them as Spanar and Western Electric during my argument. This is an Article 8307C suit for wrongful termination under the Workers' Compensation Act, revised civil statutes of Texas, and we are here today on an appeal by Spanar from an order granting a summary judgment at the trial court level, wherein the trial court decided that because of Spanar's filing of a grievance under her union contract, that she had thereby waived her Article 8307C statutory suit. I will argue the first point in my brief, leave the second one to the brief, and I'll now show this court why this case should be reversed and Spanar should be granted a new trial. On our application for writ of error, January of 1980, there was a case pending before this court styled Carnation versus Borner. On December the 13th of 1980, at volume 24, number 11, page 111 in the Supreme Court Journal, this court has handed down its decision in the Carnation case, and that decision primarily, as you're well aware, was divided into three principal parts. And it's our contention that the first part of that decision, entitled Conclusion of Article 8307C suit, is dispositive of our appeal and dictates that we have a new trial at the initial level. In both cases, that is, Spanar's case and in the Carnation case, the employees' union had the sole discretion to institute arbitration proceedings in that process of the grievance procedure where arbitration was to be instituted. In neither case did the employee have that right or that option. In both cases, the employee did file a grievance procedure with her union, and her union, as well as the union in the Carnation case, proceeded to some point short of arbitration. In neither the Carnation case or in the Spanar case was there an arbitrated adjudication of the employee's grievance. As you will recall in the respondent has cited the case of Thompson versus Monsanto, which is a Court of Civil Appeals case out of Houston with no writ history in 1977, wherein that Court of Civil Appeals held that where there was an arbitrated decision, a final adjudication through arbitration, that the employee had waived her 8307C remedy. Now, the facts in our case are that, as I stated, the union controlled the arbitration proceeding. No arbitration in this case or incarnation was invoked. There was no final adjudication or arbitrated decision, and there was no resolution of the grievance reached. In your decision at page 113 of the Supreme Court Journal, you said the legislature's purpose in enacting Article 8307C was to protect persons who are entitled to benefits under the workers' compensation law and to prevent them from being discharged by reason of taking steps to collect such benefits and precluding the employee from filing an Article 8307C suit under these circumstances would thwart the legislative purpose of enacting Article 8307C. In Carnation, as you will recall, the union wrote a letter to the employer. The employer, after some time, responded that yes, when they felt the person was ready, they would take them back into employment, and at that point, there was no further action taken. In our case, Spanar's union proceeded through Step 5, which is the step in their contract that immediately preceded the decision to institute arbitration or not. At that point, the union, for whatever reason, opted not to arbitrate, and Spanar filed her statutory suit. Now, Western Electric has contended in their brief that because they proceeded through Step 5, that there was a final decision and that one was reached. And I think the court in Carnation has addressed this argument indirectly when it said that short of an arbitrated decision, or in the Carnation case, there was a special issue finding where the jury has said no final settlement was reached prior to arbitration, but there can be no preclusion. If the logic of Western Electric is carried backward into the process, then it is conceivable that a person perhaps could waive their statutory 8307C suit at step 4, or 3, 2, or 1, or theoretically, when they first approach their union representative and say, I think I might have a grievance, and that representative says, yes, we'll look into it. And I don't think that an election is made at that point. Under the agreement which was enforced between the union and Western Electric, particularly on page 15 of the transcript, there is some wording that says that in between steps 1 and 2, 2 and 3, 3 and 4, and 4 and 5, that if the next step is not instituted, that the case would deem to have been settled. However, after step 5, you proceed to an entirely different article under the contract. A separate article that says if you want to institute arbitration, that you have a 60-day requirement in which to do that, and there is no wording in there that if you do not do that after step 5, that you have thereby reached any kind of settlement or adjudication of the cause. Now, in addition to the case of Carnation, which I think is dispositive, let me say to you that I think that the remedies, well, let me say that I don't think that an election is possible, because the remedy under the arbitration or under the union contract was for reinstatement and back pay. The statutory remedy, which is a personal right, not between the union and the employer, but specifically given by statute to Ms. Spainhour, provides that she can get reinstatement and, as per your decision, reasonable damages to include past wages, future wages, some other damages, and there was a sharp division as to exemplary damages. But there are certainly rights under that statute which are separate and apart and not governed by and cannot even be arbitrated under the union contract. As I say, Spainhour was suing for violation of her statutory right and not the violation of any provision of her employment. The Carnation case at the Court of Civil Appeals level, 558 Southwest 2nd at page 819, the court held that we are unwilling to hold either that the existence of a labor contract containing provisions for a grievance procedure or the mere filing by an aggrieved employee of a grievance pursuant to that procedure operate as a matter of law to deny an employee his right under a state statute which expresses the state's public policy of protecting its important interest in ensuring that the workers' compensation law can function without unjust treatment from its employers as a result of exercising the compromise. The court held at that level, as you reviewed it, of course, that barring an arbitration or a final settlement that the 8307 suit was not barred. A further interesting example that the two remedies are different is found from a close reading of the Thompson versus Monsanto decision, which respondent relies upon. The point arbitrated in the Thompson decision was Thompson physically unable to perform his assigned work? And the arbitrated decision held that he was unable to perform his job or any job that was in his classification are at the same level as his seniority. Interesting, because I think that, although there's no written history on that, I think that under the law of Carnation, had they sought a writ to determine whether or not they were precluded from their other remedies under 8307, that the case well might have been decided that, although that was even arbitrated and decided, that it was a contract right that was decided, and the man still had separate and distinct and different remedies under the state statute. Texas has a substantial interest in protecting the integrity of the compensation system.
An interesting case that I have found
as it relates to the question of are we superseded by some type of federal law that would require that the collective bargaining agreement be the sole remedy is the case of Vaughn versus Pacific Northwest Bell Telephone Company. It's a case that was decided by the Supreme Court of Oregon, May the 6th, 1980. And if I might, I would like to just talk about this case for just a moment. The court says that the issue in this case is the proper relationship between two possible available remedies to a discharged employee. The facts are almost identical. After an arbitration, the plaintiff sought a money judgment for her lost wages plus some other statutory remedies.
What side on that, counsel?
Excuse me. The side on that is 611 Pacific 2nd, page 281. Vaughn versus Pacific Northwest.
West Bell Telephone Company. In that case, as in our case, the defendant moved for summary judgment on the ground that the circuit court lacked jurisdiction to grant the relief requested because of preclusion under the collective bargaining agreement. Same union, coincidentally, Communication Workers of America. The defendant argued that plaintiff's discharge is a matter that is covered by the collective bargaining agreement, and therefore the grievance procedure constitute plaintiff's exclusive remedy. The plaintiff, however, argued that the bargaining agreement is irrelevant because her claim is based on an independent statutory scheme enacted by the legislature that provides different remedies from that under the collective bargaining agreement. The court has held, the point on appeal was that the court held that we can answer the defendant's preemption argument by construing plaintiff's lawsuit as a suit to enforce independent statutory rights, and it's not a suit to enforce rights under the collective bargaining agreement, and therefore the federal law does not preempt. I think that the case is saying that and pointing out in another jurisdiction, but it's a situation that's very closely analogous, is that after due consideration they have found that there are statutory rights which are separate and apart from and distinct to the collective bargaining rights, and therefore no election is possible. For the reasons which follow, the court in Vaughn said that the judicial relief for the violation of a right arising from statute is an independent remedy which is not foreclosed by the availability of or the resort to a grievance procedure for arbitration of rights arising under that contract. And I think this decision is not out of line with wording in your Carnation versus Warner decision, wherein on page 13 at the end of the preclusion section, you set forth that there are different and distinct remedies under the statute as opposed to the contract. As I said, the Thompson versus Monsanto decision is relied on by the respondent. In that case, the Court of Civil Appeals said that there are some cases where the federal law is supreme, but that is where applicable. And I think that this is not a case where it's applicable. We're talking about two different sets of remedies and two different sets of rights, one to the union and one personal to the employee. Different remedies. Reinstatement on the one hand versus reinstatement and damages on the other. Additionally, the case, United States Supreme Court case of Alexander versus Gardner Denver, found at 415 U.S. 36, 1974 decision, is a case which, again, is analogous. It deals with the an employee filed a grievance and had an adjudication of that grievance by arbitration, and then the employee filed a federal discrimination suit under Title VII. And the Supreme Court said in that case that, in a unanimous opinion, the Supreme Court held that plaintiff was entitled to a trial de novo because the legislative history of Title VII manifests a congressional intent to allow an individual to pursue independently his rights under Title VII. It's analogous. It's another personal right, 8307C is. It is a right where the federal law was never meant to supplement or to preempt, and it's a right which provides different remedies. In conclusion, I think the Carnation versus Borner decision is dispositive in the first section of that opinion. I don't think that an election
as to her claim for damages can be made because it's two different remedies, two different rights. Certainly in the language of the contract itself, found in the transcript on page 15, indicates that perhaps the case could be settled in between steps 1 and 2, 3 and 4, 4 and 5, but after 5 there's a whole other article that deals with arbitration, different time limits, and the settlement language is not found in that article. The supremacy question, which is implicit in all of this, I think is not on point, because the federal law was not meant to dictate to the state important policy decisions that the legislature has seen fit to implement through statute that gives personal rights to employees separate and apart from and distinct from the remedies that they might have under a collective bargaining agreement through their union. And with that, I'll give you some time back.
Counsel?
Yes, sir.
Let me ask you one question. I think the concern to me in this case is this is a summary judgment case. And in the motion for summary judgment supporting affidavits, the Western Electric stated that this suit could not be maintained because Ms. Fainauer had not exhausted her administrative remedies, where she had not gone clear through the binding final arbitration.
Yes, sir.
The affidavits in opposition were that, well, I thought that we were finished. I think it was, well, I thought the procedure was finished. Now, when do we get, well, what stage in this proceeding have we gotten into whether a binding election was made?
Well, at the very inception, when she talks to her union under the contract, she has lost any say in whether or not that grievance proceeds to the next higher step. I think that as far as she was concerned, the union had done all that it was going to do, and all that she could have done under it, she had no rights. She could not have proceeded any higher. The point is that because an arbitrated decision, I would submit to you that because the arbitrated decision would have dealt with the issue of reinstatement and back wages, on the other hand, her statutory right would have dealt with other issues of damage, that she had no obligation, even if she could have, which she couldn't have, to pursue an exhaustion along those lines. It's an entirely different set of remedies and rights. And the argument is addressed in the Bond case, Supreme Court of Oregon, wherein they say the exhaustion argument is not on point because there is no requirement that they exhaust the grievance procedure remedy in light of the fact that the statutory remedy is completely separate and apart and is not hinged upon any decision that the arbitrator might have reached. The arbitrator could not have decided fees. The arbitrator could not have decided future damages or the mental anguish question. And the arbitrator could not have decided the exemplary damages question if one were submitted by the trial court. So although she did not exhaust, she did all she could do, and that was turn it over to the union. The union did not exhaust, but that question is not dispositive of the appeal because the fact that she could have instituted at any other time her statutory right, separate right given by statute as opposed to the contract with her union.
But on what basis did the trial court grant the summary judgment?
It's my understanding that the trial court granted the judgment on the ground that she had asked her union to represent her in a grievance procedure and had thereby waived her Article 8307C lawsuit in which she had made a binding election of remedies. And the remedies are not the same. That's the way I would answer your question.
Thank you.
As I understand your argument, you're saying that
the difference in the remedy, that is, the damages that might be allowed, is what makes, is the criterion that you look at as to whether or not she has selected or had an election of remedies.
That is my underlying feeling about the whole case. I think the Carnation case says that where there is no arbitrated final decision, an adjudication of sorts, where the union stops short, for any reason, short of an arbitrated binding decision, then the lady has not been precluded from her statutory.
I know that, but I understood you to say that even if she had gone all the way to a final arbitrated decision,
yes, sir,
she would not have elected remedy.
I think
because the rights are different.
I think so.
And you say that's because the remedies that she can seek in terms of the kinds of damages are different. Has that ever been used as a criteria for election of remedies? I'm not aware that it has.
Well,
the kinds of damages you can seek.
The kinds of damages are a reflection of the different remedies. The difference in remedies is not necessarily the kinds of damages that you can seek, but the fact that the state has said that you have a right to litigate certain questions which are not decidable under your union contract. Now that is reflected in a difference in remedies. But my point is that the state legislature has said you've got a whole different remedy here. It is a different remedy, separate and apart from it. The fact that the bottom line or the damages versus the reinstatement are different, I think, are reflective of the fact that you do have two different remedies from two different authorities, one being the contract and one being the statute.
Which is what makes elections, isn't it? In elections of remedies.
Yes, sir. I think that the question to be litigated is separate and apart, though, from the question that would be decided under the contract.
Well, counsel, are you saying that if you went to final arbitration, got certain damages there, that you still have the right to go get the other damages under the statutory proceeding?
I think the case of Vaughn and the cases that I have found under that, particularly the Alexander versus the Gardner-Denver Supreme Court case, say that you do. But I think before we reach that question, that the court can say, based on your decision in the Carnation case, where you said that there was no arbitrated decision, and therefore allow the employer to say that there had been an election was not proper, and that it would thwart the legislative purpose of protecting employees from pursuing their compensation rights. So I'm saying that initially I think the Carnation case disposes of it, but underlying that, based on the Vaughn case and the Alexander case, that the Supreme Court well might have said that there are additional state rights that you can still pursue in light of an arbitration, because in the Alexander case, I think the man did get an arbitrated decision on that. In Monsanto, Thompson versus Monsanto, the decision that was arbitrated was he physically able to return? And my point in reading that is, I wonder what the court would have said had they filed an 8307 suit for wrongful termination. It well might have been, again, that they had reached an arbitrated decision on one point, but he still had a statutory right to litigate another matter. So I think Carnation, your language in Carnation, where it points out the different remedies, and where it says that under these fact situations where there is no arbitration, or there is no finding at the trial court level by special issue, that a settlement was reached somewhere in the process, that the person, the employee, should not be barred from pursuing her 8307C6. So I think there's two levels to it.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
We'll hear argument from the respondent.
Mr. McGowan will argue for respondent.
Your honors, because the briefs in this case do not really go very deeply into the question of the federal law preeminence, I'm going to spend a good deal of my argument discussing that, but I'd also like to ask Judge Polk permission to send an additional letter brief after argument to wherein I'll cite some of the cases that I'll be discussing today.
How much time would you need to?
No more than a week, Your Honor. And again, I'll be giving the same cases here and the same citation. I can make it less than that.
No, you may have the week
and counsel will have an additional week to respond or to file anything additionally that you may wish to file. You may want to include the citation of the Vaughn case.
I believe that there are two principal questions that need to be discussed. And first, is federal law applicable to this situation? And then secondly, if it is applicable, whether or not the facts of this case or this particular Texas statute call for some exemption to the federal laws. The Thompson versus Monsanto case discusses in some detail the applicability of the Taft-Hartley Act to this type of situation, in addition to the cases cited in the Monsanto case. I'd also like to discuss some others. I believe that there's no doubt that the Taft-Hartley Act applies to a union employee who claims against his employer for wrongful discharge. That's well settled, and you can read Simmons versus Union News at 341 Federal 2nd 531, which is a Sixth Circuit case decided in 1965. Can the employee avoid the collective bargaining agreement imposed by federal statute by alleging a particular reason for his discharge? In some limited cases, it's been held that that is correct. For example, the Gardner-Denver case cited by the petitioner does allow an exemption for discrimination cases. But if you read that case, you'll discover there the United States Supreme Court is saying that the Taft-Hartley Act itself is preempted by Title VII. There are other examples of where you can avoid the collective bargaining agreement. For example, if you can show fraud or deceit, if you can show that the union did not fairly represent you, cases that I'll discuss in a minute do indeed allow you to go ahead into the courthouse. But none of those things are allowed and have been alleged in this case. It's well settled that the Taft-Hartley Act preempts local laws. And for example, the Supreme Court of the United States case of Local 24 versus Oliver at 358 U.S. 283, which is a 1959 case, which held that an Ohio antitrust statute could not be followed, that the collective bargaining agreement between the union and the employer, which allowed the union to set up rate scales for its independent owner-operated truck drivers, would take precedence over an Ohio statute that prevented independent entities from price fixing. In our case, we're not contending that federal law destroys Article 8307C. What we are saying that the Taft-Hartley Act does is take a state law and make it compatible with the purposes of the Taft-Hartley Act, so that the purposes of the state law are, as has been held in some similar cases, the state law is absorbed into federal law, and you look at it in that context. For example, see Textile Workers Union versus Lincoln Mills at 353 U.S. 448, and Local 174 versus Lucas Flower at 369 U.S. 92. That case dealt directly with arbitration. It's been held that the Taft-Hartley provisions in enforcing collective bargaining agreements apply to individual employee suits against employers. And that's held at Smith versus the Evening News, 371 U.S. 194. Now, where a collective bargaining agreement mandates the use of the grievance procedure, there are cases that have held that that must be followed, and the resort to the courthouse is preempted. And Vaca versus Sykes, which is cited in respondent's brief, is for that position. The only court remedy there mentioned by the court is you can sue the union if they unfairly represented you. But that's not an issue here. I have not read the Vaughn versus Pacific Northwest Bell case cited by the petitioner, but I did not hear him say that the employee elected to start out with the grievance procedure. And I think that's an important
thing in our case. The collective bargaining agreement is very important here because it allows the employee a choice. He doesn't have to start this grievance procedure. Paragraph 2 of Article 10 specifies that the employee, without the intervention of the local union, can go ahead and deal directly with the company. Had the employee done so in that case and dealt with the company and negotiated with it and got nowhere, I think they could have pursued their lawsuit.
Has the union reached any decision in this case?
Yes, it has, and I'll explain how by showing you how the steps work. What Mr. Steinhauer did in this case was use paragraph 3 of Article 10, and that is, instead of proceeding on her own or through an attorney, she elected to go ahead and start the union grievance procedure. The first two or three steps are done on a fairly informal basis, orally, using the union representative to confer with the management representatives. And this is what she did. When the grievance in each one of those cases was decided against her, she then proceeded through steps 3, 4, and 5, which require written grievances. Those were dealt with. The summary judgment evidence shows that they were decided against her. When she went through step 5 of the grievance procedure, you find by reading paragraph 3 and paragraph 8 that any step of this grievance procedure, if she doesn't proceed to the next step within 10 days, the grievance will be considered final. There's one exception. After step 5, which is the step they reached here, that additional time, that is a 60-day time period, is allowed for the union to institute arbitration proceedings. The summary judgment evidence shows that the local union wrote to the international union stating the facts of the grievance, not recommending for or against arbitration. The international union ruled against it, and arbitration was not effected within the 60-day period. This brings to my mind a little bit of the philosophy behind the Taft-Hartley Act. And the reason why, in my mind, Mrs. Feinhauer undoubtedly proceeded with the union grievance procedure. Assuming that she has a good case and will prevail on the merits, it's much faster than going to the courthouse. She does not have to go through an attorney, but federal law allows her to use the union representatives. Moreover, if the company refuses to comply with the grievance procedure or refuses to go through arbitration if asked for by the union can do something that even this court can't do, and that is it can call a strike, and that can bring a company into line pretty fast. So there are very definite advantages for the petitioner in this case to have gone through 5 steps of a grievance procedure. But when she does that, it is submitted by the respondent, she has made an election of remedies. And it's been held in Papadopoulos versus Sheridan Park Hotel, 410 Federal Supplement 217, which was decided in the District of Columbia in 1976, that once the employee has initiated this grievance procedure, that the employee is bound by the results and he cannot later sue in the local courts. It's been held that once the grievance procedure is settled at any step, it binds the employee, and a court cannot review the merits absent of fraud or unfair representation allegations. And it's been held that actual arbitration need not be reached, and 3 state courts have come to that conclusion. Pratt versus Wilson Trucking, which is from the Georgia Supreme Court at 104 Southeastern 2nd, 915. The Kentucky Supreme Court has held the same thing. Horn Transfer versus Morgan, 398 Southwestern 2nd, 234, and Grubb versus Leroy L. Wade and Son, 384 Southwestern 2nd, 528. That's from the Missouri Supreme Court. A new court, a civil appeals decision from the Houston Court of Civil Appeals, decided on December the 24th, after this court's decision in the Carnation case, has reached the same conclusion. And it's Hughes Tool Company versus Willie D. Richards. It is not yet reported. There, the court specifically held that the employee must choose before a final settlement of the grievance whether he wishes to file suit under Article 8307C or proceed under the employment contract.
Which court, Houston Court, is that?
Your Honor, I believe it's the 14th, but I don't have it here. I don't know which one. I can tell you, though, that it was decided per curiam by Judges Colson, Miller, and Preston. I think an interesting thing here is to compare the cases that we have presently decided at two ends of the spectrum. The Thompson case at one end, where the employee went through the grievance procedure, went through a final arbitration, and the Court of Civil Appeals there had no problem in deciding that the employee had made an election of remedies and gone through full arbitration procedure. At the opposite end of the spectrum, we have the Carnation case, where the employee did indeed begin the grievance procedure, but the company wouldn't respond. They wouldn't answer union letters. They finally, after 5 months, they sent a letter back saying, well, we'll agree that within the next year we decide she's better. We'll, at our option, may rehire her. Well, the union threw up the claim. I suppose the union could have gone into the courthouse to force arbitration, but they didn't. I think in that situation where the union has been in good faith but the company has not, the employee ought to be allowed to go into the courthouse. And so the Carnation sense makes sense to me, even under the preemption rule of the Taft-Hartley Act. But our case is different. Mrs. Spainhower here called upon the union. There's no pleading in here alleging that they didn't represent her in good faith. She went through five steps of the grievance procedure. The collective bargaining agreement itself says that at the end of a step, if you don't go on to the next step, it settles. She went through five steps. The union elected not to go to the step after that, which was arbitration. Hence, indeed, you have a final settled determination
at the collective bargaining level, which precludes the petitioner from then going into the courthouse. The fact that there are different remedies under the statute, I don't see how that's going to preempt any valid arbitration agreement. In fact, I don't know of any statute that prevents people from arbitrating their claims rather than going to the courthouse, except for a few statutes that prevent prior arbitration agreements, that is, before the dispute has occurred. The Securities and Exchange Law, for example, has such a provision. However, once the dispute has arisen, brokers and their customers enter into binding arbitration agreements under the New York Stock Exchange all the time. I've handled many of them myself. They're binding and enforceable in the court. It's admitted that the trial court correctly granted summary judgment in this case, and the decision of the Court of Civil Appeals affirming that summary judgment ought to be affirmed. Thank you,
counsel. We'll hear rebuttal or argument from the petitioner.
Now, please, court. Your decision in Carnation, wherein a person had a grievance procedure stopped short in midstream for whatever reason at the election of the union, was considered, and it was decided that if a union stops for whatever reason, they throw up their hands, they say we've taken it through so many steps, but at any point that they stop prior to an adjudication, an arbitration, that the employee should not be precluded from then filing in 83076. Very briefly, Monsanto, Thompson versus Monsanto said yes, Bica versus Sykes is applicable in some cases where it is applicable, and we submit this is not one of them.